there, fictional friends, and welcome to another episode of Fully Booked. I'm Megan.
And I'm Shireen.
And we are still talking about mythology and folklore here for the month of March. Where are we? The second week of the month? Yeah.
That's right.
I don't even know anymore.
What year is it?
What time of year is it? We've had a really... just like a really mild winter from our standards, especially here so far this year in Canada, or at least in most of Canada from what I can tell. And I just don't know how to feel about the season anymore. Like it's getting to that point where I can't decide if I'm just okay with it or if I'm like, you know what, it can actually just get warmer more quickly now and I would be fine with that.
Well, the problem is that we're just feeling like we're already in spring, but it's, you know, not yet quite spring.
That's it. We're like not quite
so
there yet.
I think we're all just worried about like the final few that we're going to get from the winter.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. Yeah. I don't know. That's it. I think we're really concerned about like this whole month in general. We're still waiting because like we pre-record the episodes, obviously. So we're still waiting and we're like, what's going to happen?
What's happening?
What will happen in March? I don't know. We will find out.
We will find out.
Yeah. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about the sort of big kind of burst in popularity of mythology retellings in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, I guess. Not that there weren't any before, that there were, but I feel like in the last like half a decade or so, we've just seen this really massive resurgence of mythology inspired tales, especially Greek mythology inspired retellings and things. And I'm really curious to know like what other people's thoughts would be on it. Cause it's just, I feel like it came out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah. Like it's a weird one.
Yeah.
And we'll get into it.
Yeah. That's
in a second.
Yeah. Anyway, before we do, Shireen, what's on your nightstand right now?
Well, I have completed reading the, Kingdom of the Wicked books. So Kingdom of the Wicked, Cursed, and Feared.
Oh yes.
Fantastic trilogy. Definitely recommend it, to anyone.
What's her name there? Carrie Maniscalco, right?
Yes. I really enjoyed that. I can't remember if I was talking about it last time we had an episode that I started reading. But what was really fun about these was that it was more of a witch story.
Okay.
But it ended up actually in a way kind of fitting into what we're talking about here, because it starts off and you think that it's about a witch, and there are witches involved.
Yeah.
You find out like as the story progresses that, she is not who she seems to be. And, there's, the, you know, princes from the seven circles of hell who are in this. So all the princes of hell are represented by different, you know, seven deadly sins. Mm-hmm. So you got the seven deadly sins and, you know, the main kind of the main devil person. So I'm not going to like divulge too much because there's a lot of twists and stuff of who people actually are, in this book series.
Yeah.
But what was really nice about it was that it was a little different in that it was kind of like a murder mystery, then it turns into a whole other thing of what's going on. And then you get kind of into the underworld. You get to see a lot of like people, like characters from like, you know, the Bible or whatever.
Okay.
And it's also taking place in Italy.
Okay.
Or so you think. and again, I'm not giving anything away here. But what's fun is that it's kind of a lot of like food references are dotted in because like the main character likes to cook. And then there's like a lot of Italian words brought in too. So it's just a really fun trilogy.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, I've had the first one for a while and I've just like never gotten around to actually reading it.
Yeah.
And it was one of those that I was like, oh, it's a dark book about witches. Like, I'm definitely going to pick it up in general. And I know it's one of those that I'll get to at some point because I have read, Carrie Maniscalco also wrote the Stalking the Jack the Ripper series, which I've read all four of those. So I was like, sure.
Yeah.
Like, I like your style of writing. I will get to this at some point. So,
well, it's nice. I've got all three of them. So if you need the other two, then you can borrow away. What about you, Megan?
Okay. So I like came back from vacation recently and I like brought a couple of books with me and stuff. I'll talk about them at different times. But anyway, I don't know why I decided to bring this on vacation. but I read Bones and All by Camille DeAngelis.
Just a nice light read.
Spoiler alert slash trigger warning slash whatever the heck you'd like to call it. Technically, Bones and All is about cannibalism. not in the way that you think it's going to be. And I wouldn't say that there are extremely graphic depictions of anything throughout the course of the story, because yes, it's a consequence of certain things, but it's not completely the point of the story. A lot more of it is to do with the idea of not having your own identity and abandonment and a lot, and like one's own like personal history and kind of a lot of like, and like a found family and like a lot of what comes along with that. So it's like, yes, the cannibalism is like a metaphor to a degree, but it's not the thing of just like, I'm a, like a gross, disgusting cannibal and that's the book kind of thing. There's more to it. It's weird because you're like, I don't know how I feel about the book. Like, it was well written. It was really interesting to read. I don't know how I feel about it. I finished it and I was like, oh, okay.
and that's the book.
And that was the book. But it is like, it is, you know, well written. It's just obviously that's it. There is like some pretty harsh subject matter in it. So be aware of that. But it was an interesting read, interesting. I will say. Yeah. So, okay. Mythology. Boy, do we love a story. And yes, do we love to keep coming back to that story over and over and over and over.
We bloody
again.
Do.
We do, eh?
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. I guess this kind of came up when I was like thinking about ideas and thinking about topics, just because I was like, do you know what we have seen a lot of recently? Is just, I feel like every recommendation list and stuff that exists online or on like TikTok or Instagram or something like that, so many of them, it's just like, oh, like, you know, what's like a really great book that's like this. And a lot of the time you'll notice within those lists there will be one in there that's technically like a retelling of some sort of like ancient Greek or Roman myth or something like that, like very much like ingrained within there, whether they're like, oh, this is like a mystery, this is a romance, this is that, especially romance, holy shit, this is that, and we've really just jumped onto this bandwagon. I think if I had to pinpoint certain things, I would say what reignited people's, I guess, sort of desire for these things was probably Circe by Madeline Miller.
Yes.
I would say like the publication of that novel, because it was very well regarded as well. I think kind of put the idea out there a little bit more, but as far as the hype and popularity, it's all of the fucking Hades and Persephone stuff.
Oh, definitely. And like, I think that, you know, it's interesting because in high school, for example, for some reason, we read a lot of like Greek and Roman like mythology. Like we read so much of this stuff, like all the different plays, all like you name it. And so what's really interesting is that you see these tropes coming back like over and over and over again in literature, because when you think about it, like this is kind of like the foundation of a lot of stories, you know, whether it be like an epic poem like the Odyssey, whether it be you know, something along the lines of like the, like Oedipus, for example.
Yeah.
And then you've got different ones, such as like, I'm thinking of, you know, there was like Tristan and Isolde that was then retold by Chaucer in the 13th century as Troilus and Crusade. And then it was retold and retold and retold.
And then it was retold.
Romeo and Juliet.
Troilus and Cressida by Shakespeare well. Like that's a direct retelling of that as well.
Exactly. And so like you just see these stories come back over and over, and it's inevitably the same characters, right?
Yes, yeah.
However, we're at a point now where I think because we have so much of an appreciation, if you will, for like the spicy literature.
Yeah.
We found, you know, we're looking at it from a lens of like fantasy, dark fantasy, you know, and then we're now moving into more of the mythology. Like how do we bring our Greek mythological characters into the folds of this?
Yeah, it's true. I I guess I do have, it's so funny. I feel like I have such mixed feelings about the Hades and Persephone stuff in general, because like I've read a bit of it. Mm-hmm. Like I read a couple of things. I think what was that fucking one? Touch of Darkness.
Yeah. I think I have that.
By Scarlett Sinclair. I just haven't read it. Like yeah. I've read that, and I read like a couple of other small things here and there. And I know that there are obviously like really like obviously all of the Scarlett Sinclair stuff, like this woman's just making a living on Hades and Persephone.
She is,
at this point.
Yeah.
It's wild. There are so many different versions of stuff, and I can't figure out her timeline of things, like what is what. I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to look into it in more depth. She's got like this entire saga. What is it? What's that other author's name? Katie Robert, Neon Gods.
Okay.
That's another really big one that I see on a pretty regular basis, particularly on the lists of spicy shit. Mm. Like that's everywhere.
Yeah.
Lore Olympus is a graphic novel that is also very popular. I think it might have been an online like cartoon that was then turned into a graphic novel. That's like a really big one. Den of Vipers, I think, is a Hades or Persephone retelling or something as well.
A lot about Hades and Persephone.
So many. And I guess
it never really got explored though as a subject. And I think because we're all into like the dark shadow daddy, like who's your ultimate shadow daddy?
Hades. Yeah. And I guess, like, the god of the underworld, I guess, would make sense. Yeah. And so I guess I'm like fine with it, and I'm okay with reading some of it, but I guess also I'm okay with reading some of it more from the lens of being aware that like in the original mythology, they weren't like madly in love with each other. Like she
was a prisoner.
Yeah, she was a prisoner. He tricked her into staying in the underworld, and then she was trapped there and would, that's it, I think monthly be given an allowance of time to be able to return either to Earth or Olympus, I don't remember. And, you know, she wasn't like necessarily incredibly happy. And I think
why would she?
Yeah. And I think that, like, I guess, like, as long as you're coming at these things with just, like, you know, whatever, this is total fantasy, and that's fine. And yes, the original story is as well. Mm. I get it.
Yeah.
But I just hope that people come at these things with, like, that knowledge, at least kind of being aware of what the source material is.
I mean, you know, 9 times out of 10, the source material is like super rapey. Like, you know, like just not something that you'd be like, hey, you know, it was a wonderful story.
You know, it was super romantic. Yeah. This thing.
I think what you're trying to say is like, let's not perpetuate toxic tropes into our 2024.
Yeah, genres. That's it. I guess, like, you know, like, I'm fine with it as long as we're all like properly, functioning with the knowledge that like this is total fantasy, and that's fine. If you want to turn it into something that's more like sexy, go right ahead. Just as long as everyone's aware that like it didn't necessarily start off that way.
Yeah.
And then I find when you get out of the idea of like that's it, like a lot of like the Hades and Persephone stuff especially, there's a couple of other ones too. Mm-hmm. Like maybe a couple of stories about like Orpheus and things like that, but not as many. But I do find that on the other end of the spectrum, one thing that I think is cool that we're seeing with these retellings is many, many of the stories, Circe included, but even, what's that other book called? There's a book, a novel called The Silence of the Girls by Pat Barker, and there are a couple of other ones as well that are very much putting these retellings forth from the perspective of often ignored female characters.
Yes.
In the original stories, these characters that were just like, here I am and I'm subservient and I just do whatever the men want to do and stuff, but we're being given a lot of new material that's, you know, here's the story, but here's the story from her perspective. Here's what she dealt with and how she overcame things. And I think that that's a really cool kind of, I guess, like,
angle perspective.
Yeah, like an angle to take. And I think that it's really cool that we're living in a time where we're doing that now.
Well, you know, it's funny because listening to you speak, I'm thinking back because I just mentioned, you know, Troilus and Crusade that was written by Chaucer. So Chaucer he was a 13th century, for anybody who has no idea who the fuck I'm talking
That's
about.
Fine.
13th century writer who wrote the Canterbury Tales was his most famous, I guess, piece of work.
Yeah.
But he was, his genre was satire, basically. Yes, yeah. It was satirical fiction based on, a lot of it was based on the Catholic Church, or sorry, on the church itself, like mm-hmm. the Anglican Church at the time. And he wrote one called The Legends of Good Women. And it was all about, like, these historical female figures, mm-hmm. like Cleopatra.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think off the top of my head who exactly was in there, but it was all these, like, famous women throughout history mm-hmm. up until the 13th century. So when we're talking about these retellings, like, we're going back in time here.
Yeah.
And even he explored this from the satirical standpoint. And I remember that every single one of these, they were like short stories from the women's point of view. And every single one ended with her ending her own life because her husband died. And it was just really funny because it's basically like the message was like, oh, well, you know, we can only classify her as a good woman if she ends her life at the same time as her husband.
Yeah, and then her husband died, so she totally killed herself.
So it's like he was even making a commentary on how ridiculous positioning is, you know?
I mean, I really like that in the sense that, like, that must have been unusual for that time period to have a writer, a male writer, mm-hmm. who, I mean, women weren't writing in the 13th century, but
bourgeoisie as well,
that's true, of, you know, upper class, that's it, who would have been making commentary about these things. Not that satire didn't exist before Chaucer, of course it did.
Yeah.
However, just the idea of someone pointing out particularly things to do with gender inequality at that time.
Yes. And so what's always interesting is, like, you know, reading from that lens and then looking at now these new retellings and your point about, like, we're bringing, like, the woman's perspective into light on where she would fit in all this.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate that we're trying to give her more of a stronger voice in all this, you know?
Yeah, I really like, and I know Margaret Atwood mm-hmm. has a book called, what is it, Penelopeid?
Okay.
Which is about Penelope, who's Odysseus's wife, who was left by him when he left Ithaca to go and fight in the Trojan War, and he was gone for a total of 20 years.
Yes.
And during that time, that's it, she had, she thought that he was dead, and she had suitors and everything like that. And of course, in like the Odyssey and things like that, she's portrayed as, like, very subservient. Oh no, I was just waiting for you. But, you know, obviously Margaret Atwood, being the type of author that she is as well, really takes something again and flips it to the woman's perspective in terms of, like, what she would have had to endure and fight on her own as well, having been, that's it, stuck there by herself and not really necessarily being in that much power when she was there on her own without him.
I wonder if we've already had a retelling of, like, Helen of Troy, or if that's
coming. Yes, we have.
We have?
We have, okay. Yeah. We've had that before. I think there's a book called 1,000 Ships and stuff. Yeah, there have already been, like, a few of those as well, that, again, I'm not just a pretty ornament. I have a personality, and I have things, like, you know, I have, like, things that I'd like to accomplish, and
I'm strong.
And I do things, actually, with my time. Yes, no, it's just, I do appreciate, I guess it's really interesting to me to, now that we're talking about it, to see both sides of the coin, where on the one side we have these, like, spicy romances that are coming out of this, but we also have these, like, pieces of basically feminist literature that are being published that have this really wonderful and interesting new voice and perspective with regards to these original tales that gave the women no voice, essentially, in the, like, the majority of the time.
There were plot devices most of the time.
Yes,
like, I mean, Helen of Troy, she was the face that launched 1,000 ships, you know? Like, they were just plot devices. And now, to your point, to go back in and explore, like, who they actually were and the part that they played in these stories is, like, a really interesting new spin.
Because, I mean, I find, like, of what I've read of the original stories, like, older texts, like, the only time I can ever think of something where I feel like the woman was really, even though she's not taken seriously at all, like, one of the only ones I can think of off the top of my head where she was, like, the woman was at the real center of the story was probably, like, Antigone.
Oh, yes, I read that too.
You know, something along those lines, because she's trying to, like, forewarn of impending doom and things.
Yeah,
and of course she's
listens
ignored
to her. Yeah. Like, that's the whole point. So the whole point of Antigone is to demonstrate how women did not have a voice and how, like, even if they knew what they were talking about and they were right, well, she's just a woman.
So it doesn't matter. Like, why would I listen to her anyway? And there was another one too, like Cassandra. She was another, like, prophet basically as well, who was always, that's it, ignored with regards to anything that she was saying and stuff.
Which is, like, a hilarious, like, commentary in itself, right? Like, even like if even way back when they were writing plays and stuff,
yeah,
to demonstrate how little women had a voice, like, obviously, you know, it was kind of like, hey guys, imagine if we actually listened to these women.
You know, like, oh, here's boy,
a thought, you know.
Yeah, that's it. And I know that also we've also seen there have also been, I think, I believe one or two more modern retellings from, again, from the perspective of, like, a character like Medusa, mm-hmm, who obviously is vilified, oh, yes, like, yes, greatly vilified in original texts and things like that. So that's an interesting kind of perspective to have as well, is, like, someone, you know, somebody who is, like, a villain, quote-unquote, you know, and I'm like, well, okay, why can't you make something from their perspective? We're doing it with fucking Hades all the time, and he's supposed to be an asshole.
Well, that's, like, if we can make concessions for, like, look at how many retellings we've had, yeah, of, like, Hades or the devil, because Hades is essentially the devil,
yeah,
right?
Pretty, like, much, yeah.
And so it's like, look at, like, Lucifer and, like, all these, like, shows and everything that have explored the devil's perspective.
Yeah.
And they always make him seem a lot more, like, nuanced. He's more of a gray character.
Yes, yes.
Than, you know, we originally believe. And mm-hmm, so it's like, why would we not have
a female version of,
like,
that?
Yeah, a gray version,
exactly,
of that.
Like, why would she not be able to, tell things from her own perspective? And, like, Pandora, she fucked everything, mm-hmm, up, but what is her perspective?
She's like, this is my jewelry box. Here's my box. Whoops, sorry. Oopsie.
Why would we not be able, yeah, to have something, you know, from her perspective to explain, how did I get here? Because I'm sure I didn't just walk in like an idiot and go, oh, look. Look, I mean, a box.
She might have, but.
I mean, maybe, but you know what I mean? Like, I feel like,
she's,
I feel like,
bad day.
You could do, yeah, so much more, and it could be so much more nuanced than that. And so I think that what's fun, I guess it's just fun now to be getting both sides of things, yeah, in a way. And I think because of that, I guess, okay, so to answer kind of our original question, let's talk about that. Like, why has this happened?
Yeah.
Like, why have we had this, like, massive fucking resurgence with this? I can't answer exactly why. I don't know. Like I said, from my perspective, I feel like Cersei really went a long way, mm, to kind of kicking off the idea of this, and then much followed, and the whole Hades and Persephone stuff really kicked things into high gear. But I do think that at the end of the day, it's interesting to, you know, we love all these modern stories now, but it's so interesting to look back on these original myths that they're all based on,
yeah,
and just see, you're like, God, people knew what they were doing back then. Like, the entertainment value really never left, did it? Because we're still thousands of years later able to create these new works that people are still really, really interested and invested in, and these stories that they're still really captivated, yeah, by.
Well, I mean, it's also, I think, from a familiarity standpoint,
yeah,
like, think about it. If you're a writer and you're trying to create, like, a brand new character that, mm-hmm, you're not going to know is going to hit the mark or not, you could just go dive in and be like, hey, let's get Satan in here.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, something that people recognize.
Yeah, and then you can, like, give them more nuance and explore their character more. Like, from a creativity standpoint, mm-hmm, it gives you a little bit of, like a boost.
Yeah.
But I think it's really cool. Like, what I really appreciate in a lot of these, you know, discussions that we've had where we've talked about, like, the evolution of these genres and, like, where we are right now, yeah, one thing I will say is that it really seems that people are a lot more invested in books right now than they have been, maybe even, like, if we look back 10 years ago, yeah, you know, what was the attitude in, like, pop culture around books versus now? Like, I'm really loving that we're seeing, like, resurgence of, like, all the different genres, yeah, and maybe it's, like, a lot all at once, but it's, like, anything you want to get your hands on right now, there's going to be something new coming
and
out pretty soon.
And, like, and that, again, I would argue that is, like, probably one of the more positive aspects of social media. There,
yeah,
are tons of negative aspects to it, but I would say that that's maybe one of the more, like, positive things that's come out of it, is the, you know, just having a community and such ease of access to the idea of, like, what's good? Like,
yeah,
what should I pick up? What is good? And allowing people in book spaces to share their thoughts and feelings about things,
yeah,
in, like, like an open kind of discussion more, as opposed to like a hidden, like a forum or like a message board or something that like, used to exist.
Oh, a book club? That's boring.
Yeah, that's
it. It's a whole other thing now. And I really appreciate that they've started introducing like editions of books that are like pretty and stuff, you know?
So that's a long way for the aesthetic. Yeah. There is like books 100% have like a collectability aspect to them, where people simply, that's it, go looking for them based on, oh, here are the special edition covers, here's this, here's that, and you're like, boy, wow, we've really, like,
we've come a long way.
We've really made this into, like, this is no longer just, it's no longer just a question of, like, I collect shoes, I collect bags, and stuff like that. No, no, you can 100% collect books and build up quite a library for yourself. And, you know, obviously, yes, that comes from partially, part of it comes from, like, you know, the, like, the aesthetic of, like, a beautiful, like, book case that's, like, really well organized and, like, how aesthetically pleasing it is to see all these, like, nice things on, like, displayed on a bookcase, which, yes, is a little bit silly, obviously. But at the same time, you know, if doing that to a degree is helping authors and people who are putting their work out there, be celebrated and be purchased and help these people make a living to continue to produce that content, then I don't, you know, I don't really feel that bad about it.
No. I personally am enjoying these, like, very pretty books. Like,
yeah, that's it. I won't apologize for that. Sometimes the special edition is nice.
So. Oh, very much so.
Yeah. Anyway, how do you guys feel about this whole resurgence in mythology retellings? Like, have you read several of the books? Are you, like, super hooked? Do you fucking hate them? I don't know.
Are you like, this is really stupid?
Are you, like, a purist in
classics?
Yeah, that's it. Are you, like, a purist and you just want to read the original text? Or you think that it's ridiculous that we've done all of this, or, like, you know, like, sort of butchered these, like, original stories in the first place? You know, hey, who knows? You can let us know about that over on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok at fullybooked.ca. And you can also check out our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/bookwasway better. But until next week, guys, keep on reading.
Thanks, everyone.